And what we found was a couple things. When environmental temperature, when it's warm, like now, colostrum yield goes up. Also, the longer the dry period, colostrum yield goes up, except in the winter, okay, in the north. We also found that herds that are further north, so we're talking northern hemisphere now, if we have people in Brazil or Argentina listening, the further south you go, the less colostrum they make. So it's really interesting.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Adasail, provider of Smartamine M, the best-in-class rumen-protected methionine product for dairy producers who want to optimize milk production. Kemin invites you to optimize your herd's performance. Dive in at kemin.com/dairy. Birdus Nutrition, the fatty acid people. Priority IAC, the only company bringing the fields of microbiology and nutrition together. Zinpro Isoferm is the nutrient your herd needs. Fuel the rumen first and unlock dairy herd productivity and greater profitability.
Well, hello, everyone. Welcome to the Dairy Nutrition Black Belt Podcast. I'm Rick Lundquist, your host for this episode. Today as our guest, we have Dr. Peter Erickson, Professor of Dairy Management and Extension Specialist at the University of New Hampshire. And we're going to discuss all things colostrum today. Pete, it's been a while.
Yes.
And it's great to reconnect again. How are you?
Yes. Great to see you.
Yep. Pete, I've got a bio sketch here from you, but rather than having me recite that, why don't you just tell us a little bit about yourself and give us some background on your research interests?
Okay. So I'm Pete Erickson. I've been a professor here at UNH for going on 27 years. I've had quite a few graduate students. So I think 25 master's students and 6 PhD students. Prior to that, I worked in industry across North America, US and Canada. And then in 1997, I started here at UNH. I am a dairy nutritionist by training, and 25% of my time I serve as in extension as a dairy specialist. A lot of the work we fell into this work with colostrum. In my prior positions, I did a lot of work with heifers, being with the pharmaceutical company that I worked with for a while. So I did a lot of work with heifers, and I kind of fell into some colostrum work thanks to Jim Quigley, who is a UNH alum and pushed some research my way. And I've continued in that vein ever since. So initially doing baby calf work, but then looking at, you know, now how to feed that transition cow and how that impacts the colostrum and calf growth and what have you. So that's kind of it in a nutshell. I've lived in central New Hampshire for, 27 years. So it's in a little farm. So,
well, good. I'm glad we're emphasizing your colostrum work today. You know, it's a good colostrum management's always been a integral part of a good replacement program. But I think there's even renewed interest in it now. For one reason, because the price of replacements is so high, and we want to make sure we get them off to a good start. But then now we've got other revenue streams, like the beef on dairy revenue stream, you know. And so I'm sure that these calf buyers will probably, they're going to look at whether it's a number one or number two calf, and whether the dairy has got a good colostrum program to get them off to a good start. You might need another couple $100 for a day old calf, you know?
No, it's remarkable. And a lot of things that we have taken for granted really kind of come to the forefront a little bit. And, you know, even just how we feed that calf on day one, if we're talking a dairy heifer, can impact how much milk she makes 2, 3, 4 years down the road, which blows my mind. But anyway,
and I've certainly seen that too. I have some custom heifer raisers that I work with, and boy, they can. It's a tough choice when they get a heifer that comes to them, and it's they could tell that it's one of these poor doers, and then you know, and do you continue to put money into this animal, or do you cut the cord early? You know, so it really it's an important part of the program.
Right, right.
And now we even have another revenue stream, the human market, right, for cosmetics and for supplements. Who would have thought, you know?
Well, I know someone who started a company several years ago. I won't mention her name, but she used to tell me she'd take powdered colostrum every day, a tablespoonful. So
it's crazy, but
yeah. Well, and you know, but there's such a lot of good things in it, and it kind of makes some sense, I guess. So
it does, yeah, certainly makes some sense. Well, having said that, what kind of recommendations do you have to maximize colostrum yield and quality?
So that's a big deal. We've run into this, and I don't know. It seems to have garnered its problem, or you know, developed its problem with the Jersey breed. However, it looks like the Holsteins are actually have more of a problem with lack of colostrum yield. There was a really good study out of Texas, actually out of Washington State, but the research was done in Texas. And they looked at Jersey cows, and it was like in the month of December, multiparous Jersey cows produce hardly any colostrum. And so what's causing this? You know, the first thing you think of, well, it might be photo period, right? I don't think it is. I think it's environmental temperature. We did a big study with cows from across the U.S. And we looked at all these different variables. And what we found was a couple things. When environmental temperature, when it's warm, like now, colostrum yield goes up. Also, the longer the dry period, colostrum yield goes up, except in the winter, okay, in the north. We also found that herds that are further north, so we're talking northern hemisphere now, if we have people in Brazil or Argentina listening, the further south you go, the less colostrum they make. So it's really interesting. There's some data, and I know the Europeans are talking about this, where prolactin has to be released the day at parturition to convert from colostrogenesis to lactogenesis, from colostrum production to milk production. And when it's cold, prolactin is dampened, so we don't get the spike that's needed. So we're actually looking at a bunch of cows right now on three herds here in New Hampshire over the year, and we're monitoring temperature, colostrum yield, and prolactin and estradiol concentrations in the blood, and then colostrum yield and IgG in the cow. So it's kind of an interesting thing. And there's a lot of data that indicates the longer the dry period, for the most part, the more colostrum she will make. So this plan of having shorter dry periods back 10, 15 years ago, you might remember that, where everybody was like, oh, we don't need to give them a dry period. That really did not bode well for colostrum production at all. And so, you know, 60 days, we go back to where we originally trained, is about right. If you go a little longer, if you're worried about it, you know, dry cow off 10 days earlier, you know, it probably would help. So I've talked to some producers that have done that, and it's been good. So that's interesting. The nutritional aspect of it, there's a lot of data that's kind of on the fence. An interesting one is protected choline. There was data indicating that choline can actually stimulate IgG yield and colostrum yield, protected choline. And the authors think it has to do with basically the conversion of choline to methionine. And I think 14 methionine residues in an immunoglobulin G. So it kind of makes sense that that would happen. And there's, I think, only three studies, so the jury's a little bit out on that. So it's not the nutritional aspect of it is not as clear cut as one would think. So and there's, again, not a lot of research on that aspect, especially colostrum yield. That's really, so that's kind of the thing we're looking at.
Again, an interesting topic, and I'm happy to see you again. It's been a while. Hopefully we can do another one of these if you're available.
Sounds good. I look forward to it.
Thank you.